The Lord among us or not. Amen. In the 14th chapter of Exodus, tarps, sagging, guy lines left loose in all of their hurry, the Israelites exhale a long day's tension and relief, if only just for a moment, as they establish camp besides the sea. Their heart beats at a rhythm that far outpaces the slower, more rhythmic slap of waves crashing along the shore before the sea draws back those waters and retreats into darkness. Just as running waters had delivered Moses a helpless baby wrapped merely in reeds, waters too would bear the Israelites' demise. Moses, Pharaoh, was closing in and there was nowhere left to run. Moses jingles his ancestor Joseph's bones in his pocket and feels sweat creeping from his palms to the tips of his fingers as Egyptian chariots emerge amidst a cloud of dust on the horizon. The Israelites are afraid. And they yell to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us to die here in the wilderness? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in this wilderness." By the time we reach today's reading from the 17th chapter of Exodus, we know how that standoff by the sea ends. We know that God parts the Red Sea for the Israelites, granting them passage to safer land and leaving their Egyptian pursuers swallowed up in the waters. We know, in other words, that God delivers the Israelites. And yet we find ourselves in a moment where it's increasingly clear that while God has delivered the Israelites from bondage, God has not delivered them to safety. The Israelites are still suffering as they wander the wilderness. Today's reading marks what is called often the third complaint. After successfully crossing the Red Sea and escaping their enemy, the Israelites immediately find themselves struggling to find nourishment. In Exodus 15, the Israelites are in the wilderness of Shur, wandering for 3 days without water. When they finally find water in Marah, it's too bitter for them to drink. Moses famously throws wood into the water, sweetening it enough to become drinkable. And then in the following chapter, the Israelites now are starving. Similar to when they camped along the Red Sea, they begin again to panic. They shout, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger." Again, Moses hears their complaint and takes it to God, who then rains bread down from the skies, settling upon the grass like morning dew. And now today in Exodus 17, the Israelites again cry out in thirst. And again they catastrophize, saying, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children with lives and livestock with thirst?" God tells Moses, perhaps helping him out, to carry on to Horeb, where from that mountain, Moses reportedly takes his staff, strikes it against a rock, and finds water enough for the people to drink. Now, the Israelites during the Exodus have long considered to be among the pantheon of great complainers. You start to just really feel bad for Moses. He offers miracle after miracle, and by the time he's finished conjuring up a miracle, another complaint has already been submitted to him. It's no wonder, he says, "God told me I need to continue on to Horeb." But I want to challenge the notion that the wandering Israelites are merely complainers. I want to suggest instead that the wandering Israelites were traumatized. Our passage today ends with a desperate and yet fundamental question, perhaps a plea. Is the Lord among us or not? In other words, is God with me? Does God care for us and our plight? Does God consider my suffering? Or put even more simply, God, where are you? These wonderings and these doubts are central to human existence. They may be asked periodically for many of us, with more frequency in our times of trouble and perhaps less often when we feel comfortable. And yet, in the wake of trauma, these questions reserved only for sometimes can instead become persistent. Bessel van der Kolk, the author of The Body Keeps the Score, characterizes a traumatic event as one in which a person or persons perceives themselves as threatened by an external force that seeks to annihilate them and against which they are unable to resist and which overwhelms their capacity to cope. The Israelites were collectively traumatized. Now, when a people find themselves in this kind of state, it's hard to imagine having control over your circumstances. We can identify that the Israelites felt an acute loss of agency and a loss of hope. When things begin to go wrong for them, even in the slightest of ways, they sense catastrophe. When without water, or without bread, they're unable to access the creativity to make, to find a plan, to find sustenance. They're unable to hold out hope that there would be food or water in the next town. No, instead, the Israelites find themselves back at the banks of the sea. The Israelites find themselves thrown back into memories of their bondage. Serene Jones captures this sense of hopelessness in her work, Trauma and Grace, when she writes, "Trauma survivors can lose confidence that they are effective actors in the world because in the original event, they experienced just the opposite, a state of frozen powerlessness. In these cases, a loss of will is accompanied too by a loss of hope. Again, it is asked, is the Lord among us or not?" I suspect that the question in that instance is a rhetorical one. The fact is that life is hard when you've got to get water from a rock. Life is hard when streams flow not abundantly, but when nourishment is found only in the small and hidden places. Life is hard when you feel like you don't have enough. We're talking about a people who were hungry and thirsty, a people lacking basic sustenance. It can be hard for us to see God in the midst of suffering. Like the story of the Israelites wandering in the wilderness, our questionings of God need not to be seen merely as complaints. Some of us may have experienced real hunger and real thirst. We may have gone without in fear that our sustenance would never arrive. But hunger and thirst, of course, are not only material. Perhaps you've been starving for good health. You've been grappling with a diagnosis. Perhaps you're thirsty for the safety of a wayward child, or perhaps you hunger to again feel joy in the midst of depression. And we live in a world where a lot of folks are smacking stuff up against that rock and praying for water. Far too many people. There are too many wondering from where their next meal may come or where they might lay their head tonight. There are too many parents in our country mourning the loss of a child to gun violence. And there are too many people whose trauma suffers in silence, seen primarily as a burden upon their peers. This is not the society that the church is to present, though. The critical work of the church is the work of encounter. The work of the church is to mend those wounds. The work of the church is to bind. Our task is to give all people a place not to hide their wounds, but a place where they can trust that they may be laid bare before each other, and before the altar. The church is a place where we can be, where a way can be made when there seems no way at all. Where when all we've got is a rock, we can discover enough water. We may not always get what we believe that we need, but we find ourselves supported and nourished enough that we can trust and grow deeper in our love for God. At Passover Seders today, folks gather around a table and often sing a song called Dayenu, which in Hebrew roughly translates to, "It would have been enough." Now the song goes something like this. If he had split the sea for us and had not taken us through on dry land, it would have been enough. If he had taken us through on dry land and had not pushed down our enemies in the sea, it would have been enough. If he had pushed down our enemies in the sea and had not supplied our needs in the wilderness for 40 years, it would have been enough. You get the idea, but the song continues on, beginning first with a gratitude for being taken out of slavery and ending with gratitude for their covenant with God and the establishment of the temple. A people wounded, traumatized by their bondage and the Exodus, dignified in their relationship to God, in gratitude, in the sense that God is indeed present and concerned with our deepest needs. Now, before the realization of any of those blessings, those same Israelites stood tired and scared and hopeless beside the sea with chariots rumbling towards them. And Moses spoke to the masses, and here's what he said to the people. Do not be afraid. Stand firm and see the deliverance that the Lord will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians who you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you only have to keep still. The Lord is among us indeed. Amen.